Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. Hour 2, right at the top. Joel Klatt, 5-10 minutes. It's the Herd, wherever you may be. However you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. In 30 minutes, Joy Taylor, and this is interesting. This will not make headlines, but in Herdline News, she's going to have a story that's, what is our feeling on this show?
Nothing is everything. Everything is something.
Everything is something. Very interesting story. She caught on to it very quickly. Seized it with her journalism radar beam. And she saw it, and I'm like, that's interesting.
It's not nothing.
It's not nothing. It is something. It is great to have you in the Herd, brought to you by Jersey Mike Sub, be a sub above. Okay, so you know the game every summer. July, I give you my NFL predictions, and then I allow myself two amendments. Injuries, I watch teams in preseason. You can tell stuff from preseason. I always use the example, Dak Prescott, first preseason game for the Cowboys against the Rams here in L.A., and he tore it up. And we were all like, who's Dak Prescott? And it was something. And so there are things I saw that worry me and noise for certain teams. So these are my amendments. This is official. Let's start with the AFC. I am making five different amendments. So I said last week I was taking the Patriots from 10 to 12. The problem is for every win I give a team, I have to find a loss. And that was hard because I also wanted to give Denver another win. So I'm going to put New England as a playoff team at 11-6, not 12-5. I do think there'll be some growing pains in their division against Sean McDermott and Brian Flores. I think they'll lose a couple games in division. Buffalo wins it. Patriots a game better second. Miami stays the same at 10-7. Jets have a good fight in them. They win some games they should, but a 5-12 team. AFC North, I've made this is kind of a dramatic move. I'm taking a win from the Ravens. So their star drafted wide receiver, not available to start the year. That's a problem. Baltimore September schedule, a lot of road games, is tough. I'm going to have Cleveland remain at 11-6, but because of what I'm doing with Baltimore, Cleveland wins the division. That's a home game. That's a big deal for them. Pittsburgh stays at 8-9. I thought about going 9-8, but now TJ Watt's situation, is he going to play? Cincinnati is a gamey 6-11. They're fun. They're explosive, but it's a tough division, and their schedule is brutal. In the AFC South, I'm taking a win from the Colts. I'll tell you why. I do not think Carson Wentz plays 17 games. I think he plays 13, 14, enough to win a bad division. But I worry about him. I worry about Eric Fisher at left tackle, and I thought they had a weird camp with weird vaccination stories. So they're the best team in this division, but I have my doubts about Carson Wentz staying healthy. But they'll get a home playoff game. I'm not changing Tennessee. I don't love them. I'm going to take a win away from Jacksonville, 4-13. Again, their schedule, they could beat Houston twice, and I'm wrong. But I think the two worst teams in the league could be Jacksonville and Houston. And I don't think there's a huge separation between the two. So I got the Jags, I'm going to take a win away, and the Texans stay at 3-14. We go to the AFC West. No major change, but I really thought Denver was focused in during the preseason. I like what I saw. I'm going to give them a win from 7-10 to 8-9. They just feel to me like a 500 team. And naming Teddy Bridgewater, it's not a transformative mood, but Teddy doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And I think between their defensive upgrades at corner, Kyle Fuller and Patrick Surtain, they solved their corner issue, and I like their offensive pieces. And I just don't think they're going to be a bad football team. I think they're going to hover around 500 in a better division, 8-9. So my AFC playoffs will look like this. The Chiefs, the Bills, the Browns, and the Colts will be the top four seeds. They're division winners. The Patriots, Ravens, and Chargers all make the playoffs. The big move is the Browns now win the division. Chiefs, Bills, Browns, Colts win it. Patriots, Ravens, Chargers. Okay, let's go to the NFC. Okay, I'm taking a win away from the Giants. I cannot get past their offensive line. It's bad. It was bad in every game I watched. And in this division, Washington, I think, sweeps them in division. And if Dallas, DeMarcus Lawrence, Micah Parsons, they can create a pass rush, I think the Giants' offensive line unravels an otherwise pretty darn good roster. So I go from 8-9 to 7-10. You know I don't like the Eagles. I don't change anything in the NFC North. Packers, Vikings, Bears, Lions. I got to tell you, I like what I saw with Atlanta. They've got a spark. I'm moving them up. I've moved them up twice. And I know I'm an idiot because I haven't won a Falcons game in 37 years.
What happened to the Panthers?
I don't know what's going on with me. I like what I see and I like what I hear. I have Atlanta now in second place in that division because I think they're the only team in that division that can go, that can make Tampa have to really work. They'll get in a couple of shootouts. In the NFC West, I'm going to give the Rams, remember, I took one away. I'm giving it back when they got Sony Michel. That's a good enough replacement for Cam Akers. This is an 11-win team. So it'll be Seattle, the Rams, San Francisco, and Arizona. So the only really, so my playoff teams, the Bucks, the Seahawks, the Packers, the Washington football team, all win their division winners. Nothing changes there. I move around, jockey the bottom a little. Rams, Niners, Cowboys make the playoffs. So there you go. That is the final amendment. The Constitution has 26 of them. I get two. And that's where we stand. Very excited for this. A lot of pressure. Just certain things I couldn't get over. I couldn't get over the efficiency of New England. I thought they were really efficient. Now, they played a lot of starters. Maybe it's a mirage. And I could not get over the Giants' O-line. It is a mess. And remember, a lot of teams didn't play starters. They could not block other teams' second and third stringers. In a division with Washington's front, I can't do it. With that, the voice of college football at Fox and my friend Joel Klatt, who's got a good one this week, Oregon and Ohio State. The Klatster. You know, last week, our relationship, I thought, took a very,
very cordial,
very optimistic, very hopeful.
Very, very, very hopeful. Whoa. Got it.
And I hope that it remains this week. So a lot of broadcasters are into hyperbole. I am not one of them.
Okay.
But I will say Bryce Young is the greatest freshman quarterback I've ever seen.
Just dives right in.
That kid is good.
Well, he's also playing at Alabama.
Well, a lot of guys played at Alabama. They don't look like that in their first game.
He looks great. I was excited about the way that he played. And more so, even when you take away all the pieces that they had. You know, I mean, we had never seen an offense have the Outland Trophy winner, the Biletnikoff Award winner, the Doak Walker Award winner, all the quarterback awards for Mac Jones. And here they are, and they're just the same. The level of excellence at Alabama is totally unmatched. And I think that's the one thing out of week one. If you were to ask me, like, what was your biggest takeaway at the top of college football? It was that no one's really ready to unseat Alabama. Now, whether they win the national championship or not remains to be seen. Injuries play a factor. You know, they lost a linebacker for the season.
Yeah.
But no one's ready to prepare like they do, to execute like they do. It was interesting. We were talking with Mario Cristobal in preparation for this week's game. And of course, Mario spent time with Nick, and he was an assistant there at Alabama. And he said something very interesting, and I never heard it quite like this. He said, at Alabama, for those players and the staff, every day is a reckoning. And I was like, oh, that's so good. It just like hit home, and you immediately hear that. All of you hear that at home, and it immediately makes sense, right? They play like every day is a reckoning. You know that if you're starting at Alabama, if you're Bryce Young, if you're the starting running back, left tackle, right guard, doesn't matter. Every day is a reckoning, and most likely your toughest days weren't game days.
That's right.
It was just getting to that point to be a starter, and they play like that.
Yeah, Pete Carroll at SC had competition Wednesday, and I remember talking to a couple players. He was like, let me tell you something. Our Wednesday practice is tougher than the Pac-10.
That's exactly right. Just going to hold this. It's going to fly out. I'm just going to hold it right here.
You know what? It's the way I hold a drink.
Don't worry about
firm,
it.
Firm, total control.
There you go.
So I got to say this. It's going to sound hyperbolic, but there are certain things that
I thought he told us he wasn't going to be hyperbole.
Go ahead.
Certain things travel well.
And certain things don't.
In football.
That's a mate, Colin. Really good.
Boom. Certain things also wear well over a season.
Okay.
They don't disintegrate. And I would say the number one thing with both is physicality. You can take physicality on the road. You can't always take efficiency on the road. You can't hear the audibles. But you can always win the line of scrimmage. Power wins. When I watch UCLA and LSU, and I look at how soft the Pac-12 is, I don't think it's crazy to say, oh, UCLA, this may not be overly competitive. They may march through the West.
So the three best teams in the Pac-12 are going to be Oregon, UCLA, and Utah this year. I told you last week the best team in LA at the end of the season was going to be UCLA.
You did.
And in large part because of this conversation that we're having. Those three teams are actual teams at the line of scrimmage. Okay, on both sides, offensively and defensively. We all know that Utah has been really good at the line of scrimmage. I know it's not sexy to talk about Utah and Kyle Whittingham, but he's built a program that is at
the power-based program.
And it's at the top of the Pac-12 right now. And UCLA, I just talked with Chip this morning. I tell you, man, the development they had, you know that his first year that they played games with 57 scholarship players.
Oh, no,
players.
I know. He broke the whole program down.
He had spring ball with 65 players at practice. So they're finally back to a full complement of scholarship players. They're finally back to the point where they're practicing with 116 guys out there. So they can do things like give good looks from the scout team. They can go good on good and feel confident about their depth. And then they played like it. They had explosive plays in the passing game and the running game. Zach Charbonnet from the transfer portal is transforming their run game. I think that's a guy that, by the way, a couple more performances like that, he's going to be right in the conversation about the Heisman Trophy at UCLA. He's averaging over 10 yards per carry. He's got four touchdowns, 100 yards in each of his games. So, you know, UCLA is absolutely a real contender. I got a text from someone within the LSU program on Saturday. You know what it said? Oh, my gosh, they look real. That was the text. LSU came out there and they were expecting to see soft West Coast Pac-12 football. And they walked out for warmups and they thought to themselves, this is different. This is not what we expected. And then UCLA went out there and hammered them. Do you know they outrushed them by 161 yards? That doesn't happen because you out-scheme somebody. That happens because you physically dominate them at the line of scrimmage. Impressive game.
Yeah, and I think it'll travel well. So let's be honest about Clemson. You know, Alabama loses a quarterback, next guy up. Trevor Lawrence leaves, and they couldn't get first downs.
This is where you're wrong. You need an amendment. Go ahead. Please continue.
Not even done.
I know, but we all know that you're wrong. Let's just continue, lay it out, and then I'll respond.
Is it Georgia's defense or the fact that Trevor Lawrence is so good, we just don't quite get how good he is?
So DJ made one mistake. DJ Uiagalelei, he made one mistake. JT Daniels did not make the mistake. The question I'm going to pose coming out of the Clemson-Georgia game, I think everyone's going to want to jump off Clemson and that bandwagon immediately. Oh, the offensive line is a concern. And yes, it's somewhat of a concern. But as I watched it again, okay, I'm watching it on Sunday night on my iPad, on the coach's copy, and it just hits me like 8,000 bricks. Who else can do that to Clemson?
Bama.
Bama and Georgia. Who else? Okay, so we're talking about a problem that is 15, 16 weeks away. You know, I don't know what Clemson is going to be 15 or 16 weeks from now. I do know that DJ Uiagalelei misread a defense and he led a wide receiver across the field against a zone defense when he should have just thrown a spot route. That's it. That is it. Okay, I know he didn't look great, but neither did JT Daniels. Neither did Brock Purdy at Iowa State. Neither did Sam Howell at North Carolina. Yeah. Neither did Graham Mertz at
Wisconsin. Well, it's
Wisconsin.
Hard. They don't have a preseason. It's hard.
I just think that Clemson's going to be just fine because you look at their schedule the rest of the way in the ACC, nobody's going to be playing that level
they're gonna
against
roll.
Them.
They're gonna
and they're going to be just fine. So I think giving them that benefit of the doubt is important.
Maybe he made a second mistake, that quarterback, signing with Clemson and replacing Trevor Lawrence. That could be the second mistake.
Well,
That's a lot.
I think you can make an argument, as great as Trevor was, and I thought he was the best quarterback in the sport. He was the easy number one overall pick. But the more impactful guy for that offense and the way that they used him was Travis Etienne. They're missing him more than Trevor Lawrence right now.
So is it because Brian?
He just goes on. He's just like,
I'm not going to argue. I'm trying to be the bigger man here. Oh. So with Brian Kelly, He gets all. He turns into a plum. He's bright red. It gets cold in Notre Dame and South Bend. He's just all yelling and screaming. And he had the incident early in his career there, the tragedy. Like, I get it. I get it. It's all bad. But boy, I'm going to tell you something. Between the academic difficulty, the load they ask of their students, the religious umbrella, it's in the middle of nowhere. It's cold weather. A lot of these northern powers have disappeared when kids now say, oh, my team down here, the warm weather's on TV. I don't need to go up to the cold. I don't need to go to Washington or Nebraska. Or I don't have to go to Notre Dame. I think he's as good a coach as we have outside of Saban. I think Saban's mastered the sport. But Brian Kelly, to win on the road is hard in college. You see,
it is.
You see good teams just unravel on the road. LSU last weekend. I think to myself, take Saban out of it. Could I make the argument Brian Kelly's the second best coach in this sport?
I think that he would have to win a game on a huge stage. And I get it. They beat Clemson a year ago.
That's pretty big.
But Clemson came back and throttled them in the ACC championship game. And so in those moments, I think that they have to play better. I don't think you're wrong. I think he's easy in that top four or five discussion. With what Dabo has done and built at Clemson, it's really hard to put anyone other than Dabo Sweeney right there at number two. And then Brian Kelly is right there. I love what Brian Kelly has built. I really do. And I think that this game against Florida State has been a wild overreaction. Okay, everyone's like, wow, they struggled with Florida State.
They were controlling the game.
They did, and Florida State is way better than they were even last year. So Mike Norvell has done a nice job with that team. Mackenzie Milton has provided them. I think Notre Dame is going to be really good this year. If I'm a Notre Dame fan, I'm actually very excited after that game because of what Jack Cohn did throwing the football.
Yeah, he looked good.
He looked very good, and I think that they'll run it better. Kyren Williams is going to run it for more than 3 yards a carry, right? Like, I just know they will figure that out. They're real on the offensive line. I'm a fan of Notre Dame. I think that that's a really good program. And I posed this to you this weekend. We had a conversation. Stanford has plummeted, right? Is there room for more than one really tough academic institution to be great at any given time?
It's a very good question. You and I discussed this on my podcast. It's a very good question. As Stanford was great, Notre Dame was down. And then Stanford dips for 3 years and Notre Dame goes up, that there's a limited number of elite kids. The work, I mean, I know Stanford football players. I know Notre Dame guys. What they ask of you, it's hard.
That's right.
It is a hard ask for young people. Go practice football. Go do this. Go have a social life. Go do this. I think I don't know the answer to it, but it's certainly worth a discussion, is that you've seen them seesaw back and forth. And when Stanford's good, they get that left tackle and that defensive tackle.
It's about the linemen.
That's what it is, and there's just a limited number of four-point high school superstars that are great, great students. I think it's a good.
It's a theory. I got to vet it out, but it's a theory that I'm sensing.
I do 3 hours of theories a day. I don't even vet them out. Okay, so I'll tell you somebody I'm rooting for, because I'm a man of the people, and that's understood in the industry. Is I root for people who have stumbled.
Okay,
Lane Kiffin stumbled. I want to see him do well. Sark had a personal demon. Stumbled. I got to be honest. I thought they'd struggle this weekend. I watched Texas. And that was the most clever multiple formations, multiple sets. And I'm like, he is one more recruiting class. That Texas team, that was not a walkover game.
No.
They were clever.
Louisiana is a good football team.
Yep.
That's number one. You're starting a freshman at quarterback.
Freshman.
He looked very good.
Excellent.
And he allowed the best player on the team to be the best player on the field. See, that's something we all know, the best players on the teams are, but sometimes the coaching staff and the game plan don't allow those players to be the best guy on the field, right?
In key spots, too.
Bijan Robinson was the best player on the team and the best player on the field. He touched the ball 24 times for over 170 yards of total offense. They used him in different ways.
Yep.
I thought that the defense and their ability to put pressure on the quarterback and tackle on the open field was a huge upgrade. And now they have a chance. As good as that win is going against Louisiana, I think this week is even bigger. They get Arkansas. And I know Arkansas is not great, but that's okay. So this is an opportunity to go beat an SEC opponent. I believe it's at Arkansas.
And it's only a 6-point spread. It is, I think, It's in Arkansas. And Arkansas is not a great team. But again, it's SEC but it's territory. A well, like, it's on the road.
That would
it's 80,000.
Win for them.
It'd be a terrific win.
And I'm with you on Texas. I think Texas has the potential under Sark to come back to a level where they're competing for a conference championship every single year. And if you're doing that, then I think that you can be a playoff team, you know, every other year or so on, depending on where we expand with the playoff. I like what Sark's doing.
Okay, you're doing the Oregon at Ohio State game Saturday at noon. I don't want you to give away too much of your sauce here. I don't like to do that.
No.
It's a great game. I'll be watching.
It's a great game.
Let's go to your top 10 real quick here, Klatt. I don't disagree with any of it.
And I just don't want to overreact after week one, right? So that's why I didn't overreact. Oklahoma fell a little bit because their win against Tulane was not all that impressive.
You got
Ohio
A&M.
State.
A&M a little low.
Maybe A&M a little low, but again, to my point, does A&M do to Clemson what Georgia did to Clemson? Probably not.
Here's another one.
Iowa. Folks, Iowa. Now, watch out for Iowa.
Hey.
I know how you feel about Iowa. You know what? Hold on for a second. You just sit over there. Iowa, don't let him disparage you. Iowa is for real. 7 straight wins dating back to last year, all against Big Ten opponents by an average of 22.5. They are dogs this week on the road against Iowa State. Iowa wins outright.
Yeah. I agree
with
you.
Watch out for Iowa.
Yeah, but let's not, you know, it's week one. Bring it down a little. It's still the fake ID of college football.
No, it's not. They are 21. They are in the club legitimately. Listen, Iowa, you go order your Schlitz, okay? You understand? You are totally legal in college football.
I will say this. The fake ID is in the left pocket. They are of age, and they have a driver's license.
They're of age.
The difference is they still have the fake ID in the other pocket. Let's wait in a couple weeks.
Nobody keeps the fake ID in the opposite pocket once you turn 21. It's just a recipe to get caught. Everyone knows that. You cut it up and throw it away. Not that I would know.
Oregon at Ohio State. He's Joel Klatt. Excellent work this week. I think we've bridged something here. We've got something going on. It's a semi-olive branch. And by the way, Chip Kelly, you talked to him this morning. Won't return my calls. Disappointing.
Well, one of us is the voice of college football at this network.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday on Fox, the NFL is back with a huge doubleheader. First, Jalen Hurts leads the Eagles against the Falcons. And in America's Game of the Week, Aaron Rodgers leads the pack against Alvin Kamara and the Saints. It all kicks off at 1 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check local listings for the game in your area.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't that music get you excited?
It really is good. It's a good week. You can tell when a league's good when even the teams that won't be great
are so interesting.
Sam Darnold plays the Jets. It's like, that's fantastic. Tua, Alabama faces Mac Jones, Alabama. Like, it's, you know, people don't understand this. Is that until recently, that's a true story, until recently, all my stories aren't true, but this one, until the NFL has always spent a lot of time on scheduling. They really, really dig deep. They look for storylines when they put the game on. Baseball, now, in fairness to baseball, they have this volume of games. It's harder. But they used to, until recently, have a couple of guys on the East Coast in pencil figure out the baseball schedule, and then networks went to baseball and said the Cubs and Cardinals should only play on the weekend. The Giants and Dodgers should always be on the weekend. There is no midweek Red Sox-Yankee series. That's idiotic.
Right.
Baseball never really thought about their schedule much. They didn't take it as seriously. The NBA obviously thinks about it a lot on Christmas. But the NFL, more than any league, they really break it down. This is one of my knocks on college football, where the first 2 weeks of college football should always be like last week.
Yeah.
Just everybody that's good plays for 2 weeks, because once you get to October, November, NFL just bulldozes everybody in sports. So you should have the last week of August should have 2 or 3 tasty games, then 7, 8 great ones, and then this weekend, 7, 8. This week already, there's like 2 games I want to watch. One of them is on Fox, which is Oregon at Ohio State. But scheduling matters. It's real estate. Be smart and think about it. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Well, Aaron Rodgers spoke openly about the off-season drama with the Packers when he returned to training camp this season, but he explained this week that his intention was never to say anything bad about the organization.
It didn't seem right the entire time because my motivation was never to slam the organization or the fan base or anybody specifically. I was just in contemplation and wanted to, you know, take time to think about where I was at and what I wanted to do. I didn't want to get into, you know, pissing match. I just wanted it to be cordial. I love the organization. I've had a long time being here, and I didn't want to make it, make it play out in public.
Okay. Now I want to be fair on this. So he said, I didn't want to be a pissing match.
Mm-hmm.
Those were his words.
Yeah.
And then when he finally took the podium in Green Bay, he railed on the organization for 20 minutes. Like,
rail is harsh.
Well, he named 10 players on multiple occasions. He said, I wanted them to learn from their mistakes. That's a little projecting, psychologists call it.
Like, we liked his press conference.
I loved it because you and I love interesting. But, and again, I'm tired of criticizing Aaron Rodgers. Go have a great year, whatevs. But Aaron is conflicted about stuff, and he says a lot of stuff. Remember the two big quotes Aaron had this offseason. Number one was, it's a beautiful mystery.
Yes.
That was like, that's kind of fascinating. You kind of throw that out there. And the second thing was, the loudest person isn't the smartest. Sometimes wisdom comes in silence. He talks nonstop. Today he's got another 15.
Yes, but throughout this offseason,
well,
other people spoke for him. He wasn't actually saying anything.
But the minute he could,
until that press conference,
and then he just threw people under the bus. The media. Remember the quote about Green Bay fans? Everybody knows this is not exactly a resort destination. You and I were like,
ew. I mean, it's true.
It's true, but there's a lot of things that are true. I don't say them.
No, but look.
I'm trying to be fair.
I am not being fair because I am 100% on Aaron Rodgers' side.
You are.
As I have been from the beginning of this whole.
You and I disagreed. I think escapade. Green Bay is much more functional than everybody wants to admit.
No, and I don't think that. But I don't think that Aaron Rodgers is implying that it's dysfunctional. I think he feels, much like how Nick spoke about this earlier, I think he feels he is entitled to a certain type of respect, that he has earned the right to have some input on the people around him.
All right.
And he wants to be heard. And he clearly was not heard. And I feel he was disrespected in the way that the Jordan Love pick was handled.
Yeah.
Now, they have a right. Now we get like, it's crazy. I try to pick my words specifically, but they, as an organization, have a right to draft whoever it is that they choose, wherever they choose to do so. However, we are in business. It is good practice in business to inform your partners when you're going to make an aggressive move. Is it fair to say at this point that the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are partners in this endeavor of possibly winning a championship? I would say yes. They made an aggressive move using a very valuable pick to take a player that will eventually, in theory, be the replacement for Aaron Rodgers,
right,
without so much as shooting him a little text.
Okay, true, but it's not worth 8 months of
no,
drama.
No, but nothing is everything. Everything is something.
Yeah.
And there's always one thing that is the breaking point, the straw that breaks the camel's back, right? There's always one thing. And clearly with Aaron Rodgers, it was a lot of things, and maybe that thing or something else, who knows, clearly pushed him over the edge. So it doesn't have to be a dysfunctional situation. It can be a highly functioning company, and a valuable person is being mistreated, but because they are a company person, they walk the line,
yeah,
and eventually they break. Tom Brady is in Tampa Bay right now. None of us could have ever imagined that.
But Tom didn't complain incessantly.
No, but Tom is a different personality than Aaron Rodgers.
More
so
of a team guy.
So maybe we don't like how Aaron Rodgers is handling it, but there's not too much of a difference in the situation here.
I mean, they're both well-run organizations. They drafted Garoppolo and did not give him a heads up. Now, it was a second-round pick, not a first.
No, but obviously there were other things other than Garoppolo that played a role in,
you know,
I mean, like,
you know what,
also draft choices,
you
and
know
not
what
putting
I think
pieces around him.
What increasingly bothers me about Aaron, he wants everybody to know, from his family to football to fans to Green Bay to the sport, I don't really need you. There's this constant, like, I could do Jeopardy, I could act, I'm 50-50. I like people. Tom Brady, I need my family, I need football, I need my teammates. Tom, even though Tom
is definitely a wee guy.
Yes. Yeah, I like.
And I'm of that cloth. I believe it is a wee thing.
Yeah.
Nobody got anywhere on their own. Nobody accomplished anything on
their
own.
Don't you feel this increasing need for Aaron to tell everybody, I don't need any of you. I don't need football. I could do Jeopardy. I don't need the Packers. And it's just like, can you just stop? Okay, we know how, you're so expansive and bright and broad, and your life is so filled with, you know, vineyards and movie.
I don't know. I guess I'm just wired differently. I really enjoy a contrast of personalities in sports.
Yeah, I don't. I like winners and team guys. I like team guys. I'm sorry. I like guys who care about the team.
I would argue that he does. Like, that's part of what he's advocating for, is he wants his guys there. And they don't have to listen to him. But I really think what it comes down to for Aaron Rodgers is communication. And I guess I can relate to that. So Frank Reich announced that Carson Wentz will be back as a full participant in practice today. That clears the way for him to be the week one starter and make his Colts debut against the Seahawks. That's a great recovery for Wentz, who just 5 weeks ago had surgery on his foot and was given a 5 to 12 week timeline to return. So that is great news for the Colts.
I don't think he's playing 17 weeks, but I think he'll play enough.
I would agree with that.
I mean, there's a history with Garoppolo and Wentz.
Yeah.
They're not playing 17 games. They're not.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're obviously starting a new era with these 17 games. I think how quarterbacks are managed, the value of a backup quarterback is going to skyrocket because of this as well, I think. So it may not necessarily in the future be such a knock that you don't actually play 17 games. But yeah, for this season, constructed the way that it is, and him coming off of this injury, I would agree that that's a probable outcome for him, especially because this is such an aggressive, you know, timeline for him to come back, right, from surgery. Now, obviously, he's well, or they wouldn't have him out there because they're not going to risk the entire season on that. But that's good news for the Colts. So the Jets announced their 5 team captains for 2021.
Interesting.
Rookie quarterback Zach Wilson is among the group. He is one of 2 offensive captains, along with wide receiver Corey Davis. And this was voted on by his fellow teammates.
Oh, that's good. The teammates voted the kid a captain.
Yes, the players vote on the captains.
Oh, so Zach Wilson was voted captain. That's a promising sign.
Trevor Lawrence was also named the captain as a rookie quarterback.
Oh, that's a promising sign. So
the other teams with first-round rookie quarterbacks, the Niners and the Patriots, have not announced.
But well, how about Miami?
Tua is not one of the Dolphins' captains this season.
Oh!
Their captains on offense are wide receiver Mac Hollins and right tackle Jesse Davis.
Well, excuse
me? And Ryan Fitzpatrick was a captain in 2020.
Oh, wait. Oh, okay. So Ryan Fitzpatrick was named a captain. Tua's not named a captain by his teammates. You're going to tell me that's nothing?
I don't believe it's nothing.
Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, but the guys they named captain aren't even great players.
I don't think it's nothing. And listen, I do feel for Tua, because I feel like his first year, and I said this from the beginning, I did not like the way that the first year was managed. I didn't have a need for Ryan Fitzpatrick as the starter. I get it. You guys wanted to win games. I felt that Tua's development was more important. But what do I know? I just talk on a mic for a living. Here we are in year 2. This is the year it's supposed to be Tua's team. A week ago, we're talking about the Dolphins possibly trading for Deshaun Watson, and now he is not a captain for the team, as voted on by the players.
Years ago, when Russell Wilson got to Wisconsin as a transfer, 3 weeks later, the Badgers named transfer Russell Wilson captain. Why? Because he exhibited leadership traits. Years ago, there was a quarterback, I forget, was at Michigan State, Connor Cook, and he was never named captain. He was a 3-year starter. And I was told by somebody who was connected to the program, they're like, yeah, there's a reason. And I remember saying, don't draft. This is a problem. Tua's not name a captain by his teammates.
I don't think it is.
Everything.
It's not everything. Of course not. It's not everything. But I don't think that it is a reflection of his personality.
But maybe the team doesn't really view him as the.
Captain. Of the team.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
He's the starting quarterback of the team.
Old scraggly Ryan Fitzpatrick got named captain.
I don't think it's insignificant. And I don't think it's too. I also don't think it's Tua's fault, but I don't think it's insignificant.
I'm not blaming anybody.
They are announcing more of the captains today, so we will see who else is named captain amongst the rest of the league. But yes, Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence, captains.
Wow. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
There are a lot of hot stories today.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Apollo is Tommy John's most advanced men's underwear with a performance-grade dry-release fabric blend. 7 degrees cooler than standard cotton underwear. TommyJohn.com/herd. Check out the site for details. Not to be political, but I'll sound like a conservative here, and I guess some of my financial leanings would be moderate to conservative. One of the things I always laugh at is tax the rich. We have a zillion-dollar debt. It's not going to dent it. Tax corporations... It's pretty nauseating when you hear about these multinational global, you know, corporations, many in the country pay no corporate taxes. It's gross. It's gross. Like secretaries pay taxes. Truck drivers pay taxes. Tax the rich. My whole life, we're trying to squeeze, pull the top down and move the bottom up. It doesn't matter. Sports is the ultimate meritocracy. You got salary caps. You've got scholarship limits. Serena dominated for 20 years. Federer and Djokovic dominate. Alabama, there's never been a college football team as dominant as Alabama. In the NBA, LeBron and KD have been in 12 of the last 13 finals. In baseball, the Dodgers have won 8 straight division titles. All sports is trying to do is what society and politicians are always trying to do. Not too good and not too low. And we get all in the middle. And in my lifetime, I've never seen more dominance. It can be in F1 racing. It can be in international soccer. It can be in men's and women's tennis. It doesn't matter. You can't stop smarter, more driven, more willful people. Go ahead, tax them. They're going to make a lot the next year. You're not going to stop great. And that's why what the NFL does is rather amazing. In America's most popular sport, 90% of this league is smushed in the middle. I mean, baseball's not. There's no salary cap. You just buy better play. I watched the Dodgers and the Cardinals last night for about 6 innings. The Dodgers are almost better at every position. There's nothing the Cardinals can do. Dodgers have more money. They're in L.A., you know, bigger cable deal. I watched Alabama this weekend. Oh, they'll win it again. I mean, it's like 3 tennis players in the world for 15 years. 4. Serena, Federer, Djokovic, Nadal won all the big matches. Except the NFL. If you take out Tampa and Kansas City, they're the Super Bowl favorites, and they're considered way better than everybody else. And then let's say at the bottom, it's the Jags, it's Houston, it's, you know, Detroit. 5 of 32 teams, 16%. The whole rest of the league is within a field goal. I mean, it's incredible. Think about Kansas City. They have probably the smartest offensive coach up there with, like, Bill Walsh ever, Andy Reid. And he's great. And then they have Patrick Mahomes, and everybody says that's the best quarterback. And in the last 2 Super Bowls, they've been outplayed in 7 of the 8 quarters. I mean, if it's not for a fourth quarter against the Niners, they're 0-2. I mean, they were outplayed by the Niners for 3 quarters. And they were outplayed for the entire game against Tampa. And that's the team I keep being told. That's the dynasty. That is the dynasty. I mean, the NFL is the league of hope and optimism. No other sport can do it. And I think it's great because it gives everybody a sense, we got a chance. I mean, the Jets over-under is 6.5. If I suggest they'll be under that, their fans get all angsty and prickly. What do you know? You'd be like 6-11. Yeah, that's what Vegas says you're going to be. Everybody goes crazy. So it is something to behold, because you just don't. In the last, I've seen a UConn women's basketball dynasty. The Patriots were a dynasty, but even in their dynasty for 20 years, they had a 10-year gap. They didn't win a Super Bowl. And every Super Bowl they were in, except the Rams Super Bowl, came down to a play. They won by three. They lost by three. Never had a touchdown in the first quarter. That's with Brady and Belichick. Best coach, best quarterback ever. They never scored a touchdown in the first quarter for like their first seven trips to the Super Bowl. They were all decided until that Rams game by a possession, a play. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card automatically in the first year with no limit. How cool is that? Get used to hearing yes when you use the Discover card. Discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations do apply. Hour 3 next.